Okay, so today we're going deep on something that can be a little bit tricky to wrap your head around.
Mm-hmm.
It's called mass arbitration.
Yeah.
And we're looking specifically at the American Arbitration Association, the, what is it, AAA ICDR. They just updated their rules on how all this works.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
It really is.
Yeah.
So basically, instead of having one big class action lawsuit, you have like a ton of little individual cases.
Yeah, it's like a swarm of lawsuits.
Yeah.
All directed at one company.
Yeah, and they all get kind of like bundled together.
Right, exactly.
And so that's what mass arbitration is.
Exactly.
But before we get into all the nitty-gritty details of the new rules,
sure,
maybe we should step back for a sec.
Yeah.
Like, what even led to this whole mass arbitration thing becoming so common?
Well, honestly, it goes back to that big Supreme Court decision back in 2011.
Oh, yeah.
AT&T Mobility LLC v. Conception.
Uh-huh.
It basically paved the way for companies to really favor arbitration.
Instead of class action lawsuits.
Over class action.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, you know, all those little tiny arbitration clauses that are buried in the fine print.
Oh, yeah.
Like every contract we sign.
All the terms and conditions.
Yeah.
Nobody reads.
Exactly.
But they're important.
Well, they are now.
Right. Like, they become a major player in the legal world.
Yeah. So how is mass arbitration actually different from just a bunch of people suing a company all at once?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
It really comes down to how the cases are handled.
Uh-huh.
So in mass arbitration, you've got all these individual cases.
Right.
And they're each seeking their own resolution.
Okay.
You can kind of think of it like a fleet of ships.
Okay.
They're all sailing in the same direction,
mm-hmm.
but they each have their own specific course to get there.
So there's some coordination.
There is some coordination.
But they're not all.
It's not just one
big... You need one giant case.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's where the AAA ICDR rules come in.
Yeah.
Yeah. They provide this like framework for managing all of these proceedings.
Right. So, you know, wrangling hundreds.
Thousands even.
Even thousands of cases.
Especially in consumer cases.
Yeah.
It can be a lot.
Yeah. That sounds like a logistical nightmare.
It can be.
Yeah.
It definitely has its challenges.
So they've been working on these rules for a while now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. They're constantly tweaking and refining.
Yeah.
Trying to make the process better.
So one of the things I read was that they were having some problems with the fees.
Yes.
Like the way the fees were structured.
Yes. The per case fee structure was a major sticking point.
Okay, so like every single case had to pay a separate fee.
Right. And it sounds simple enough.
Yeah.
In theory.
Yeah.
But in practice, it created all these like financial disputes really slowed things down.
So it was like they were trying to create this more efficient system.
Mm-hmm.
But the fees themselves were like clogging it up.
They were a major roadblock.
So how to fix that? Well, they decided to get rid of that whole per case fee structure.
Okay.
And they replaced it with a flat fee.
Okay.
Up front.
So it's like one fee and you're in.
It's like an all access pass
to
the mass arbitration arena.
I like that.
Yeah.
So no more financial surprises.
Right. You know what you're getting into from the start.
Yeah.
It's all about transparency and predictability.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's not just about making it cheaper.
No. It's about making the whole system more efficient.
Yeah.
More user-friendly, I guess you could say.
Yeah, like less of a headache for everyone involved.
Exactly.
Okay. But we've got to remember that, you know, we're talking about individuals going up against huge corporations.
Absolutely a critical point.
Yeah. So how do these new rules make sure that it's a fair fight?
Right.
You know?
That's a key concern.
Yeah.
And one of the things they've done is they've given more power to the process arbitrator.
Okay, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Who's the process arbitrator?
So the process arbitrator is basically like the referee.
Okay.
For the whole math arbitration process.
Okay.
They don't actually decide the individual cases.
Right.
But they set the ground rules.
Mm-hmm.
They manage the flow of information.
Okay.
And they make sure everything runs smoothly.
So like the person who makes sure that everything's fair and square.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
They're there to keep things moving.
Yeah.
And prevent those little procedural hiccups from turning into like major roadblocks.
Okay. That's a good thing.
Yes. It's all about efficiency.
Okay, cool. So we've got the flat fee.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the super-powered process arbitrator.
Right.
What else did they do?
Well, another interesting change is that they've added a requirement for representatives to actually affirm the accuracy
of the information.
Of all the information
we're
providing.
So no more like fudging the numbers.
Exactly. It's about accountability.
Okay.
Making sure everyone's playing by the rules.
Yeah, that's important.
It is.
Especially when you're dealing with so many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then what about those staged fees you mentioned earlier?
Oh, right. So the staged fees, that's another way they're trying to make things more manageable from a cost perspective. So instead of having that one big payment up front, the fees are now structured in stages and they're triggered at different points in the process.
So you only pay for what you use.
That's the general idea. It's kind of like a pay-as-you-go system.
Okay, so we've got a flat fee for entry, a super-powered process arbitrator,
To keep things moving.
and staged fees to make the costs a little bit easier to swallow. Okay, so it sounds like they're really trying to streamline this whole system.
They are. They're trying to make it as efficient and fair as possible.
But these changes are mostly focused on like consumer and employment cases, right?
That's right. The bulk of the revisions are geared towards those types of cases.
Okay, so what about those massive like business disputes, international legal battles? Do these rules apply to those as well?
That's a whole other layer of the mass arbitration onion.
Okay, so we've only just scratched the surface here.
We've just dipped our toes in. There's a lot more to explore.
Okay, well, stay tuned then because we're going to be diving deeper
Yes, we should.
into all of
We'll
that
uncover those
in the
layers.
next part of our deep dive.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, so we're back.
Yeah.
And last time we were talking about mass arbitration and,
Right.
all the changes that the AAA CDR is making to try to make it
Yeah.
smoother and more efficient.
It's a work in progress,
It is.
but they're making good strides.
But I think it's safe to say that anytime you're dealing with like thousands of cases, it's going to be a little bit complicated.
It can be daunting, especially when you're talking about individuals going up against these big corporations.
Because it's kind of like facing an army of lawyers instead of just one.
Yeah, it can feel like a real David versus Goliath situation.
So how can an individual even hope to like get a fair shake in that kind of environment?
Yeah, that's a big concern. And I think the AAA ICDR recognizes that. And they're trying to address it in a few ways. One is by really focusing on the role of the process arbitrator.
Okay, can you remind me what the process arbitrator does again?
Sure. So the process arbitrator is kind of like the conductor of a massive orchestra. You've got all these different instruments all playing at once. And the process arbitrator is the one who makes sure that everyone's in sync.
So they're not deciding the cases,
Yeah, Mel.
but they're kind of like setting the ground rules.
Right, exactly. They're the ones who keep things moving and make sure that the whole thing doesn't descend into chaos.
Because with so many cases, it would be easy for things to get out of control.
It could easily become a tangled mess.
And I guess those staged fees we talked about,
Right.
those also help a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you're not hit with
This giant,
smashed.
massive financial hurdle right at the beginning.
Exactly. It breaks it down into more manageable chunks, which can be a big help for individuals.
Yeah, especially when you're going up against a corporation that has like,
Limitless resources.
tons of money to throw at legal fees. But I mean, let's be real here. Even with all these safeguards, some people are still going to worry that this whole mass arbitration thing is just going to tilt the scales in favor of the corporations.
It's a valid concern, and it's something that the AAA ICDR is taking seriously. They're trying to come up with ways to address that. One of the things they're doing is they're really encouraging early mediation. So like trying to settle things before it even gets to
Yeah,
like a
exactly.
full-blown arbitration.
Try to find some common ground, work things out amicably.
Because sometimes it's better to just like shake hands and walk away.
And you can save everyone a lot of time and money.
So that's good. But what about transparency?
Ah, yes.
Because
Transparency.
I know some people argue that these mass arbitration proceedings are kind of like shrouded in secrecy. It's hard to tell what's really going on.
Yeah, that's a legitimate concern. And it's one of the main criticisms of arbitration in general, that it lacks the transparency of traditional court proceedings.
So how do they balance that? Like the need for confidentiality with, the public's right to know.
It's a tricky balance, and there's no easy answer. The AAA ICDR does have rules in place that allow for some disclosure in certain circumstances, but they're also very mindful of protecting confidential information.
Because sometimes that's important, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with sensitive commercial information or personal privacy concerns.
Okay, so it's not a perfect system.
No system is perfect.
But they're trying.
They're constantly reviewing their procedures.
Yeah.
Trying to make sure they're striking the right balance.
Okay.
Between confidentiality and transparency.
So we've talked about consumer and employment cases.
Right.
But I know that mass arbitration is being used for
expanding
other things, too.
Absolutely.
Right.
It's not just limited to those areas anymore.
Yeah. So what about those, like, really complex cases? Like,
yeah.
The ones that involve huge amounts of money.
Right. Like big business contracts or intellectual property disputes.
Yeah.
Or even international trade disagreements.
Yeah. That's a whole other level.
It is a whole other level.
Complexity.
Absolutely.
So how do they handle those?
Well, they recognize that those cases need a slightly different approach.
Okay.
So they've developed specific rules and procedures.
Okay.
For managing those larger complex arbitrations.
Okay. So it's not just a matter of like.
No.
Scaling up.
It's more nuanced than that.
Okay.
You need specialized expertise.
Yeah. Because you can't just have any lawyer.
Exactly.
Handling those cases.
You need people who really know their stuff.
Right.
And the AAA ICDR has panels of arbitrators.
Okay.
Who have expertise in all sorts of different industries.
Okay. So they've got like the right people.
They've got the right people.
In place.
And they also provide guidance on how to manage the discovery process.
Okay.
Which can be a real beast.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about like
mountains of documents.
Yeah, mountains of documents.
And expert testimony.
Yeah.
Can be overwhelming.
So are they using technology for that?
They are. They're actually embracing technology
right.
to help streamline things.
So it's like mass arbitration meets the digital age.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Using technology to handle all that information.
But even with all that,
mm-hmm.
like even with the rules and the experts
mm-hmm.
and the technology,
mm.
is there a risk that some of those individual cases?
Yeah, that's a question a lot of people have.
Yeah.
Like what happens to the little guy
yeah.
when you've got thousands of cases all bundled together?
Yeah. Do they just get lost in the shuffle?
That's the worry, right?
Yeah.
And it's a valid one.
So how do they make sure that that doesn't happen?
Well, they've got a few safeguards in place.
Okay.
One of them is this interesting thing called a bellwether case.
A bellwether case?
Yeah.
What's that?
So a bellwether case is basically a test case.
Okay.
It's like a representative case.
Okay.
That's chosen from the larger group.
Okay.
And it's heard and decided first.
Okay.
And the outcome of that bellwether case
mm-hmm.
can then be used to inform settlement discussions.
So it's like a trial run.
Yeah, kind of like a test run.
Okay.
To see how things might shake out.
Mm-hmm. So it could potentially save everyone a lot of time and money.
It could.
Okay.
If it leads to more settlements.
So that's just one strategy.
Right. That's just one example.
Okay.
There are other strategic options available as well.
Okay, cool. So there's a whole like strategic side to this
yeah.
that we haven't even really gotten into yet.
We've just scratched the surface.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what we're going to be talking about.
That's what we'll be exploring next.
In the next part of our deep dive.
Yeah, we'll delve deeper into those strategic options.
Okay, cool, because this is getting really interesting.
It is a fascinating area of law.
Okay, so we're back for the final part of our deep dive into mass arbitration.
Yeah.
We've talked about the rules, the players involved, all that good stuff.
The strategies.
Yeah, but now I want to like look ahead, you know.
Yeah.
Put on my like future goggles.
The crystal ball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like what's next for mass arbitration?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it?
And it is.
Where do we go from here?
Yeah, like what's coming down the pipeline?
Well, one thing that's definitely going to play a big role.
Yeah.
Is technology.
Okay.
We've already talked about how the AAA ICDR
what?
Is using technology
mm-hmm.
to streamline things.
Yeah.
Like document management and all that.
Right.
Imagine if we take it a step further.
Okay.
Like, what if artificial intelligence starts playing a bigger role?
Yeah.
AI.
Okay, now you're talking because
yeah.
AI is like...
It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's the hot new thing.
It is.
But how would that even work with mass arbitration?
Think about it.
Okay.
You file your case,
mm-hmm.
and a sophisticated AI algorithm analyzes it.
Okay.
Instantly.
Like, right away.
Immediately.
Okay.
And it compares your case to... thousands of others.
Wow.
Identifies patterns, predicts potential outcomes.
Like, so it's like having a super lawyer.
Yeah, almost like a legal super brain.
Yeah.
In your corner.
Okay. But that sounds kind of far-fetched.
It might sound like science fiction.
Yeah, but it's not as far off as you might think.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, AI is being used in like
Oh, yeah.
All sorts of fields.
It's already being used in law.
Okay.
For things like contract review and legal research.
Okay.
So it's only a matter of time before it starts making its way into mass arbitration.
So does that mean, like, lawyers are going to be out of a job?
That's the big question, isn't it?
It is.
Will AI replace lawyers altogether?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's more likely that AI will augment what lawyers do.
Okay.
So it'll handle a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Like the data analysis, mm-hmm. the pattern recognition.
Okay.
But it'll still be up to human lawyers.
Okay.
To handle things like strategy and negotiation.
So it's like a partnership.
Yeah, exactly. Like a collaboration.
Okay.
Between humans and AI.
Cool.
Yeah.
But I mean, AI is powerful.
It is.
So we've got to be careful with it, right?
We have to be mindful of the potential downsides.
Yeah, like what kind of downside?
Well, one big concern is bias.
Okay.
You know, if the algorithms are biased,
yeah.
then the outcomes could be biased too.
Right, that makes sense.
And then there's the whole issue of data privacy.
Okay.
You know, we have to make sure that people's personal information is protected.
So it's not just about, like, embracing the technology. It's about making sure it's used.
It's about using it responsibly.
Yeah, ethically.
Ethically.
Okay, cool. And I guess the other big trend we're seeing is...
globalization.
Yeah, globalization.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the world is getting smaller.
It is. Borders are becoming less and less relevant.
Yeah.
Especially in the business world.
So mass arbitration is going global.
It is.
Okay. So instead of like fighting it out in courts all over the world, you could just have one mass arbitration.
Exactly.
To resolve everything.
It could streamline things significantly.
Yeah.
And save everyone a lot of time and money.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And potentially even preserve relationships that might otherwise be destroyed.
So it's like mass arbitration is becoming like the United Nations of legal disputes.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Kind of like a global forum.
Okay, cool. So we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
We talked about the rules.
The players.
The strategies.
The future.
Yeah, the future.
It's been a whirlwind tour.
It really has.
Of the world of mass arbitration.
So what's like the one big takeaway?
I think the key takeaway is that mass arbitration is here to stay.
Okay.
It's a powerful tool that can be used for good or for bad.
Okay.
So it's important to understand how it works.
Yeah.
And to be aware of the potential risks and benefits.
Well said. Well said.
Thank you.
So I guess that wraps up our deep dive
into
the fascinating world of mass arbitration.
Yeah.
We hope you learned something.
I hope so.
And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.